You ever feel like life after service is just one long firefight with no clear enemy? The VA tosses pills your way and you suck it up like you were trained to. And that tight feeling in your chest, you just hope it goes away with time. But it doesn't. Now imagine the dream. You wake up with purpose. You found your outlet, your mission. Maybe it's not what you expected, but it's yours. You're connected, you're creative, and finally breathing a little easier. This episode is that bridge between the chaos and the comeback. Today's guest, Dustin Carter, he shares how he went from angry, aimless, and numb to finding peace through writing, therapy, and connection. We talk about his gritty journey, no sugarcoating it, just talking about the hard-earned perspectives and tools that he learned that anyone can use. Before we dive in, though, make sure you're subscribed to the email newsletter at driveonpodcast.com/subscribe. You'll get my five favorite episodes sent straight to your inbox. No fluff, just the best insights to help you drive on. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support the mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Dustin, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Looking forward to this conversation. Really glad to have you here. Yeah, glad to have you here.
And thank you. Thank you for having me, Scott. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time, man. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you bet. Before we dive into the conversation, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background. I know you're a veteran, an author. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what your background is.
Well, yeah, I'm a veteran. I'm an author. I was in the Guard, signed up back in 2003, stayed in for roughly 6 years, did a year and a half deployment, ended up in Tikrit, Iraq for a year in 2005, came home from Iraq and, you know, went straight to college, graduated college in 3.5 years. Before I was in the military, man, I was kind of a loser. I didn't know what I wanted to do with life, did all the wrong things in the world. And right when I turned 21, I signed up for the Guard, not knowing what I wanted to do. I was trying to, you know, take the easy way out. I was like, I'll just sign up for the Guard. And signed up and went to basic and AIT and absolutely loved it. Like it was the job for me in life. And I remember trying to go active. Like as soon as I got home from basic and AIT, I came back to my Guard unit, walked in there the first day, and I was like, hey, I want to go active. How do I go active? And they, you know, of course, in the Guard, the state pays for you to go.
Right.
So they want to make sure they take advantage of that investment. And so I ended up having to wait out a year before I went active. And in that year, my unit ended up getting deployed to Iraq. So they, of course, got me orders to go active. And they're like, we got you. And yeah, I went active, left home late 2004 and spent 6 months in Fort Hood, and then left January 2005 to Iraq and did a year deployment in Iraq, came home. Still, man, didn't have much at home, man, and I packed my bags. As soon as I got home, within less than 30 days, I was moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, and in college. And went to college like I was supposed to, took advantage of all the benefits, all the GI Bill benefits they gave me, every bit. And got my associates and bachelor's, and then ended up moving here to Austin, 2011, where I met my wife, and ended up going back to college. They gave me a little bit more benefits, so I took advantage of that GI Bill again and went and got my MBA. And that's when I really started writing, was when I got my MBA. I started doing my projects well before they were due. And I would do all the research projects, everything. And so by the time I was done with my MBA, I had already started writing my first book, Cortez. And it's loosely based on my hometown, just growing up in small town Texas. And it's about a kid trying to get out of his town. And it's a thriller, just loosely based on my hometown. And I continued to write. I had kids. I had infants at the time. So me and my wife, we couldn't go out. We couldn't do anything. We were at home taking care of our kids. And so I just wrote every night, man. I mean, instead of watching TV, I got bored with TV and started writing. And I still write almost daily to today. I mean, last night I was up writing some crazy story. So
do you find the writing to be like therapeutic for you, or is it just something that you do as it's just your hobby, or just the thing you do? Like some people watch TV to unwind. This is your way of unwinding.
Both. It's my hobby. I mean, it's a hobby that hasn't paid off yet. I've spent a lot of money in it, but I do it because I love doing it. It's therapeutic as well. Mm-hmm. If I'm down or something like that, man, I could write the best stuff in the world. Like if I'm having a bad day, or, you know, somebody pisses me off, man, I can come home and I'll kill a character in a book quick, man. you know, it's therapy. It's a hobby. It's all that. And I love it. I mean,
I've
written three books.
I suppose it's better to kill the character in the book than you know, the alternative of taking it out in real life, you know?
And yeah, it's fun to do, man. I mean, I'm an introvert, so, you know, I have no problem sitting by myself all day. Mm-hmm. And if I can sit at home and write 1,000, 2,000 words, man, I'll tear it up, man.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy.
Well, you know, and I think it's important for people to find those things that work with them, with their personality type, with their interest. You know, if you had no interest in writing and I said, hey, sit down and write 1,000 words, you'd be like, this is torture, right? But that obviously is something that you enjoy doing, so it's not torture. And if you were an extrovert and you needed the energy just of being around other people, locking you in a room, not locking you figured literally, but figuratively,
yeah, yeah.
You know, locking you in a room and having you sit there and write by yourself, you'd go nuts and you'd want to be in front of all those people. So, you know, for you, this is a good fit, right? And
it was perfect.
I got to imagine there's other people like you who this is a great fit for too. But I think the important piece of all of this is, regardless of your personality type, regardless of your interest, you know, find that thing that helps you kind of deal with, whether it's boredom, whether it's anger, whether it's, you know, whatever.
And that's what I've done in life is sometime, I don't know when it was, years ago, man, I had to go back and what makes me happy and what do I like to do? Yeah. You know, as a kid, I like to say, I used to like playing with my G.I. Joes, right? I like playing with my Ninja Turtles. You know, I love playing video games, but that just kills all my time and productivity in life. Right. I mean, if I could play video games all day, I probably would, but let's be real. I'm not going to be a Twitch streamer where I'm streaming my games or anything else. So I had to push all the games aside and find out what's something else that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy writing. I enjoy reading. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a dad's basketball tournament down the road, and I signed up for it not knowing anybody in there, and went and played basketball for the first time. And since I was probably a freshman in high school, and loved it, man. And I still play to this day. Like I go out there almost 2 days a week. I go out there and play with them. I got a game with them Sunday and they're actually playing right now. And, you know, and I was like, well, I can't play a day, but I'll try to be there next week, guys. Yeah. I mean, you got to find something that you do that makes you happy. Whether, you know, some people like to go hunting and fishing. And I kind of wrote about that in my book, The Veterans, but it's not really for me, man. I like being out there, but it's not my thing.
Yeah, and again, it's not for everybody. And for the people who found that and that's like their thing and they fell in love with it, or however you want to describe it, you know, good on them. They found their thing, and that's wonderful.
That's it. And you got to find your thing, and you got to find what you need to make you happy in life. And I think I have. So I'm love to read and write. So
well, that's awesome. And so you mentioned your book, The Veteran. Tell us about that book. You know, what's that all about, and how did you kind of get into it?
Well, you know, I wrote my second book, and it was right in the middle of COVID, and I had a friend come over, and, you know, he had a big-ass bottle of pills. And I was like, what the heck? Like, you know, and it was prescribed by the VA. And well, sometime during COVID, I also went to the VA for some mental health issues, probably some anger issues or something. And they wanted to just issue me pills. Like, I remember telling the lady, hey, I don't want pills. I don't want medication. You know, I'm just here for therapy, whatever. And a few weeks later, I get a bottle of pills in the mail.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the big bottles, not done. 30-day supply. I'm talking a year supply that's 6 inches long. I mean, you know, and I was like, nah, I'm good, man. And I threw them away and just, I started thinking about like all the stuff that's going on with the VA and everything. And I was like, I could write about this. And at first the story was something completely different, but then just living here in Austin, like we have homeless, a lot of homeless people in Austin, big homeless population. And if you drive down south, you'll see homeless veterans all over the place. And I realized that I wanted to write about a homeless vet and just tell his story.
Mm-hmm.
How did he get so bad where he became homeless? And also at the time I was watching The Sopranos, and you know, Tony Soprano, he's talking to his therapist, and I put it together and I was like, I want to write about a veteran going to therapy. And you know, how, yes, it sounds boring. I mean, talking to a therapist ain't the funnest thing in the world, but I think I was able to bring it out enough with the issues that the veteran has, that he was able to talk to her and get the help he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And does replay the incidents that happened in his life to get there. Like in the story, he's retelling two separate incidents, or not incidents, two separate stories. He's telling her the story of his history in the military, which goes through three deployments, multiple incidents happening on these deployments, things like that. But then he's also telling her a story about how he ended up in her office through the last month of his life. And, you know, he ended up getting in trouble, and that's how he ended up in her office. And his lawyer tells him to get him involved with therapy and gets him in rehab and all that, all the stuff that a homeless person needs. But he's never talked about his issues. And so he's sitting there telling his therapist about all of his issues and how he ended up there. And, you know, the story is meant to show you how bad it can get for somebody. But also, as long as you keep reading it until you turn that last page, you'll know how good it can get if you keep going.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, any book, you know, that any of those books that people say, hey, I just couldn't put this book down, you know, because it just keeps getting better and better and better, you know, as time goes on. And I think that's a good analogy to life. Is like, yeah, you might be in a down time in your life. You might be in a rough situation, a homeless situation maybe, or, you know, a relationship ends, or you lose your job, or, you know, whatever it is. But like, turn that page and see what's on that next page.
That's it.
And keep moving, right?
You got to keep moving forward no matter what, you know. Yeah, I've had a lot of bad times in my life, and it hasn't all been roses and great days, but, you know, you just got to keep pushing, man. It gets better.
Right.
And
right.
It's life. You got your ups and downs, and you gotta keep going through the downs and wait till you get to the ups, and you'll love it. So,
yeah, and I think something I've learned through my own therapy and through other, you know, people that I've had conversations with through this show and things like that, is that you really can't appreciate the highs, the joy and the happiness in life without the other side of it. And
no, you're spot on. I mean, you got to have the lows, man. I mean, the lows, like, I remember when I graduated college, like, I couldn't find a job to save my life. And I was working in a call center, and I mean, nobody wants to work in a call center, especially somebody that just graduated college.
Right.
You mean to tell me I went to Iraq, came home, went to college, and now graduated college and I'm answering telephones for a bank? Like, it was miserable. But at the end of the day, like, I remember whenever I got the call and told me I got a job, a good job. I went and yelled out the ocean, man. I pulled up right there. You know, I was still living in Corpus at the time, and I went and parked right there at the beach, man, and just yelled. And I was like, man, it was the happiest day of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm still working there today just because, man, I know what it took to get from where I started to where I was. So
yeah, and I think what I meant, just kind of a clarifying point for the listeners here, is that not to go seek out the bad and purposely put yourself in those bad situations.
Don't seek out the bad,
don't go and, you know, just work a crappy job just for the sake of working a crappy job so you can, you know, appreciate it. But if you're in that situation, you find yourself like, man, I hate this job, or I hate this whatever. This is terrible. This sucks. I mean, come on, we've all been there. We've all been in some suck situations that,
oh, yeah.
You know, even let's just go to a basic training where they have you rolling around in mud or, you know, doing other stuff that's like, man, this sucks. I really wish I wasn't doing this right now. But you gain that appreciation for those other times where, you know, hey, I got clean clothes on. I don't smell like ass. You know, like I'm good, right?
And like for me, like in basic, like I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was, life was so bad before I went to the military, and just I couldn't find a footing in life. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in basic, I was like, man, I got food, I got a place to live, and they're paying me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't leave today, but I know one day in the next 6 months I'll be able to leave and I'll be good.
Yeah.
And like, man, I loved it. Like, just because knowing I had some type of security behind me there, like, well, I didn't have to worry about anything.
There's security, and also I'd imagine there's a sense of purpose too, where you might have been just kind of wandering aimlessly before. And
I was out in left field, man.
And then you get to this point where it's like, hey, I have a job, I have a mission, I have, again, that security, you have financial security, you know you're getting a steady paycheck. Yeah, great. It's not the best paycheck in the world. I understand that. But it's steady and it's reliable. And you know that it's going to be coming, you know, every single paycheck, you know when it's coming and you know how much it's going to be. So, you know, just simple math. If you spend less than whatever's coming in, you're going to be doing okay, you know? So
That's how it was when I was in basic and AIT, and even Iraq, when I was in deployed to Iraq.
Yes.
I was like happy to have a check. You know, they gave me everything I needed and I was good. I was more scared to come home and mess up than I was when I was there. And I think that's the reason why, like, when I did come home, I just buckled down and went to college and did what I had to do, because I didn't want to mess up what I've earned over there.
Right. And it's kind of like you just like hit the ground running when you came back, because it's like you're deployed to a combat area where you're operating at a pretty higher intensity, and it's like why slow that down and just get used to that as normal, like let's keep operating at that and being successful.
I have to say,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly how I did it, and it wasn't until I started getting like jobs out while I was in college where I had to like kind of kick that back some, because mm-hmm. for myself, telling myself that stuff was, hey, it's all good. Hey, just do it. Let's power through it. We'll get through this one day. But then I started, you know, I started working at like oil change places and tire shops and auto shops. And I was tried bringing that same mindset and attitude to that, those jobs. And I got a lot of kickback real quick.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time I've learned that I could kick it back and I'm good. But at first when I got home, like it was hard to do to kick that back.
Yeah. I think over time you start to fall into a, you know, more manageable thing. Like that, operating at that level for long term is not really sustainable. But when you first come back, it may feel like, hey, I can't slow it down right now. So you're going to, it made sense to me, I guess is what I was trying to say, is that it made sense you were operating at that higher level. And then, you know, as you're starting to notice the world around you is not quite moving that quick, you can tone it back a bit and you can slow it down and you can bring it back to a kind of normal level, maybe still above the average person out there, but you're not going at 1,000 miles an hour when 100 will do, you know? Yeah, so
yeah, it took me a couple years to tone it back, but I think I finally got it now.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's awesome. You know, we talk about, you know, a lot of times just being guys, and especially military guys, you know, just talking about sucking it up and moving on. And, you know, through your book, talking about some of the mental health struggles that the veteran was dealing with. and the homelessness situation. I got to imagine that some of that mindset must contribute to some of the struggles that, that people are dealing with, you know, that, that just suck it up. And
of course.
Right?
Like I remember throughout my whole short military career, like that was the mindset.
Yeah.
That was my mindset was, hey, we're not going to sit call. We're not going to complain about nothing. I mean, we're going to complain to the guys and my friends, but we're not going to go complain because our knee hurts or our back hurts or, yeah. or, you know, whatever issues is going on that day. We're just going to go about our day. And part of me looks back at that and I wish, like, personally, I would have said something about a lot of that stuff. And even in my book, The Veteran, like, Kurt doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
All his issues, there's never one time mentioned in the book that he goes and seeks help for anything. He sucks it up himself. And in the book, you could just see that his progression down a downward spiral is just builds. Because he goes on his first deployment, and the first time he sees something happen in Iraq, which is an IED attack, and then they get in a fight with some terrorists, and he ends up seeing some kids get killed, or seeing that dead kids' bodies, and that messes with him, and he doesn't realize it messes with him until literally the deployment's over, and because he's still there, he's still staying engaged, and he's working with his team, and they're talking about the issues, and it's kind of like therapy. Like when I was in Iraq, we would go sit in towers some days, and you would just sit there and talk to the guy all day long. Yeah. And it was literally therapy. And Kurt is going through some type of therapy while he's deployed. But then as soon as he comes home, the booze starts happening. He starts drinking and smoking cigarettes. He recognizes that he has a nightmare after that first deployment, as soon as he gets home, and he just covers it all up with booze, and his drinking he sucks it up, man. Yeah. And his drinking progresses to, you know, three deployments of drug use and eventually being homeless and a drug addict. And that's kind of what I wanted to make sure the book talked about was, yes, he does suck it up. And a lot of soldiers, veterans, that's what we have to do in the military. You have to suck it up. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you hurt your finger or pinky in the Army, you're really in combat, there ain't nobody to tell.
Right.
I mean, nobody's going to help you. And so, you know, while you're training in the military, they teach you to suck it up. And, you know, but I think they also need to tell you that when the training's over, you need to make sure you go note it down, make sure that it gets looked at, gets treated. And a lot of times you suck it up for so long that it messes with you. And
yeah,
you know, that's one of the biggest issues I think that the veterans have when they come home from war is they don't get the help they need whenever they're coming home. They come home and instantly go back to wherever they're from with their buddies, their boys, whatever, and start partying and drinking. And maybe what they need to do is send them off on like a month-long sabbatical, maybe. I don't know, sabbatical, but like a month-long therapy session where, you know, they talk to therapists, they have daily meetings where they exercise and just kind of help them tone their life down before they're let go into the wild. I mean.
Yeah, because I've said this before, a lot of people have said this before, but the military does a really great job with helping ordinary people put the uniform on and become soldiers, Marines, airmen, sailors, you know, what have you. But they don't do the greatest job helping us take that uniform off and become
not at all.
Again, right. And so, yeah, having some experience where it's like, go and just figure this stuff out and don't just suck it up. Don't just forget about it, move on. You know, you were saying before, oh man, your knee hurts or your back hurts or your whatever. You're not going to say anything about it because you're just going to suck it up and deal with it. But like, think about that, like from a leadership perspective, like how you're doing a disservice to the folks who are under you, because later on in life, they're going to become, you know, 40, 50, 60 year old, you know, people who are having serious back and neck and legs and knees and hips and all that, those kind of issues. And they're not going to be able to get any kind of support for it. And, you know, so like, encourage for the leadership who are out there, encourage people to go and get stuff documented so that they can get the help down the line. Look after them as far as that goes. Don't look short term. Hey, we need to accomplish this mission right now today to make sure First Sergeant's happy because, you know, we want to do this thing today. Okay. And then forget about everything else. It's like, all right, fine. You might have a mission you might need to get through. Fine. Go ahead, get through that mission, do that thing, but make sure that those people who you're in charge of, make sure that they're getting taken care of too. They'll take care of you and accomplish that mission so long as you are taking care of them and making sure that they get what they need for long term. They may not even think they need it. And so you kind of have to kind of kick their ass and say, like, no, get over there and go get that stuff documented. Go get that taken care of, because you don't know. Like, it may not be a major issue right now, but it may become a major issue 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever.
That's it. You know, like, I remember, you know, whenever we were getting ready to leave Iraq, we had to like fill out some type of paperwork, a post assessment, mm-hmm. post deployment assessment. And it's 2005. So, you know, PTSD was still kind of pushed away.
Yeah.
And I remember I put on there something about maybe not PTSD, but like mental health issues or anger issues. I cussed a lot when I was in deployed. I mean, I F-bomb every other word,
sure.
You know,
I
but
think we all did.
I mean, when I came home, I put that on there, and I remember one of my senior leaders pulling me to the side and said, Dustin, if you want to make the military career, you don't want to put that on that piece of paperwork. And he wasn't wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew I wanted to make the military career, and he was looking out for me. But at the end of the day, nobody knew enough about PTSD, and it wasn't talked about. And it was, if you had PTSD, man, they're going to get you out of the military no matter what. And so he told me, hey, if you might not want to put that on there. Yeah. I put it on there anyway, but that was one of the suck it up things, man. He's like, hey, kind of suck it up and, you know, deal with it.
Yep.
And you know, no matter what, he gave me advice that probably wasn't the best advice in the world, but man, I still respect the man to this day. He's a great leader, and he was just looking out for me. But yeah, the suck it up, man. I mean, we've been told to suck it up our whole lives. And at the end of the day, we've got to switch that. And like you said, they teach you how to put the uniform on. They need to teach us how to take the uniform off.
Right. And going back to your book, you mentioned how, you know, that main character, he got into drinking and drugs and became homeless and did all these things. And those are a lot of their coping mechanisms, the drinking and the drugs and all that kind of stuff. They're not good ones, but they're still coping mechanisms. What were some of the good things that he did? What were some of the things that kind of helped get him through, you know, some of this and kind of come through the other side? Or did he even get there?
Yeah, well, Kurt in the book, Kurt therapy, and in therapy, you know, there's not much to do. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't have anything. He's just going to therapy and going to AA and NA meetings and all that, which he doesn't like any of them. But he starts working out and exercising.
Mm.
And that's the first thing that he does to start coping and helping him get his life back together. As he's talking with his therapist, you know, she tells him, working out's good. You know, you might want to even go get a job as a personal trainer, because before Kurt was deployed, he was in college on a football scholarship to El Paso in the story. And so he was on his football scholarship and went to the military. But so she tells him to start working out, maybe go become a personal trainer or something like that. Get him a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was another thing he ends up doing. He meets a veteran who gives him a job at mowing yards. And as he's going to therapy, before therapy, every day, he would help go mow yards, work the weed eater. And just working helps. I mean, you know, you got to stay busy. If you're not staying busy, you're probably going to do something wrong.
Yeah.
And so that was another thing. But I think the main thing was his therapist wanted him to talk with other veterans. So before his appointments every day with her, or his weekly appointments with her, she encouraged him to show up before the appointment and meet some of the other veterans there at the VA and, you know, just talk with them. And in the story, he meets with, I got a Korean War veteran that I added a story in there for, a Vietnam vet, Operation Desert Storm, and then an Iraq and Afghanistan veteran. And so he meets with all these different veterans and just learns their backstories, and they help him, you know, come out of his shell a little bit to know that he's not the only one out there dealing with these issues. And they help him deal with them and move forward. So it's good for him.
Yeah, the couple of components there that you talked about that I think are important is that one is the physical aspect of like go work, go do something, whether it's exercise, whether it's maybe a physical job that you might have. You were talking about like some landscaping type jobs or, you know, mowing lawns. You're doing something physically, and there's something about it. I don't know what it is. I'm not a psychologist. I don't have all the answers, but there's some thing to doing the physical stuff that takes your mind away from the mental stuff. And
does,
and whatever it is, I mean, it's great. Like the more you do physical, then you kind of just take that away, and it's helpful. I'm not saying it's going to be a magic pill and it's going to cure you and you're going to be 100%, but it's helpful. And as you're, especially if you're struggling, you're having a tough time to get through all this stuff, that's a piece that might help just make it that much easier to climb that hill, you know, to get out of that down, you know, low spot that you might be in. But also the connections, the camaraderie with other people, where you're having a shared connection as far as shared experiences. They may not have been in the same foxhole as you. They may not have even been in the same war as you, but they've had similar experiences, right?
Knowing that people have done the same stuff that you've done, not in the same foxhole, not the same war, but they felt the loss too.
Yeah.
And they felt the same feelings that you're feeling is, it makes you feel better to know that they're still here. So
they're still here. They've been through it. And if you pay close enough attention, they figured out a way through it. I'm not saying that they completely forgot about the experience or that it hasn't affected them in some way, because I gotta imagine it has. And this goes for everybody, right? This is not just a character in a book. This is, you know, real people having these real experiences. It's affected them in some way, but they've figured out a way to continue to live life despite all of that.
Exactly. And, yes, sir.
And so, I mean, it's a challenge. I'm not saying that it's easy. Like, hey, just go, you know, join the VFW and go talk to some people, and all of a sudden, boom, you're going to be cured. Hell, I'm still dealing with stuff like that too, you know, and I'm trying to figure out my own path through this. But hopefully through stories like this and other stories that I've shared on this show, it's going to help show other people that, hey, we can figure it out. And I think you get a group of members or veterans, you get them together with a problem, we're going to figure it out. You know,
so that's it. And so like his coping mechanisms, I mean, the way he helps get himself through is by exercising, working, meeting people. Another one, like when you sent me the questions, I thought about was, in the story, at the end of the story, his friend Oliver, who he met at the VA and is his employer, instead of going and mowing a yard one day, takes him to get a haircut and buy him a suit. And, you know, the transformation by doing that for Kurt in the story just changed his whole outlook. He was down and out at the beginning of the day, and just getting dressed up nice kind of helped him out and put him on a different path for that day, and, you know, put him presentable. And he even talks to a girl that day, which kind of made him feel good.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a lot of different stuff. I mean, you know, how you carry yourself is a big, how you feel about yourself. And if it is getting your hair cut and wearing a nice suit, you know, could be all the difference in the world to you.
I mean, yeah, I've had those experiences where, like, you got a good haircut, and you know, I don't have much left up there to.
I got none.
You know, so I'm talking about years ago. You know, when there was enough up there to actually make me feel good about looking in the mirror at a haircut. Yeah. You know, but you get it, and it's like, okay, you know, that you start to feel good. And same thing with, you know, some nice clothes. You know, you put on a, you know, guys put on a suit, or, you know, ladies put on a dress or something like that. It's a nice outfit that you put on, and you kind of feel a little better about yourself. You know, it's like, you know, kind of feel good. So it's a simple thing, but it has some sort of transform.
Very small, but I mean, it works. Yeah. It does something for you that could turn a bad day into a good day.
Yeah. And again, it's not like it's going to be this grand thing that's going to change everything. Like, you're going to, all of a sudden, you're going to no longer have those memories of what happened in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever you were. And it's not like a suit is going to be magical and it's just going to automatically change all that, but it's going to make that moment just that much better. And maybe that's that step that you need in the right direction. It's like, hey, that made this much better. And then, like you said, you know, the character was talking to, you know, got to talking to a girl. Oh, hey, maybe that leads to something else. And that makes that much better. And then this thing and the next thing and everything. And it just makes things so much better, you know, as you move on. So it's like kind of like a snowball effect. Like, one thing leads to another, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's what I tried doing, was I tried to, you know, I broke it down so much, and I had to build it back. And part of the story was, you know, at the point where he gets the suit, I mean, he's told his whole story almost. I think when he gets the suit, he only has a little bit of his story left that nobody knows about yet. And he's broken down, and it helps build him back up. Yeah. So,
well, even think about basic training we were talking about earlier. That's one of the things that they do in basic training, is they break you down and build you back up. You know, you may be in, you know, decent shape before going into basic training, but they're going to break you down, and they're going to build you back up into the shape that they want you to be in. And it may be the physical shape, mental shape. You know, they're going to figure out how to get you to be the type of soldier that they need you to be. And that's, I mean, that's kind of the whole gist of it. And so it's almost like we need that sort of transformation where we get broken down. We lose, I don't want to say lose, but we kind of shed some of the military pieces of us. And then we kind of build ourselves back up in this new format of, you know, getting out of the military, getting on with regular life. And, you know, not to say, hey, we forget everything else from the military. We never tap into that, but we kind of figure out what is Scott, what is Dustin, what is, you know, somebody else, what do we need ourselves to be, and how do we apply that going forward to daily life, right? And
you have to do it, yeah. Man. I mean, you can't. I had a boss a couple years ago, and he was a retired colonel in the Marines, and he expected the 80 people he had under him, probably more than that, to all be Marines, yeah. And he couldn't let that go. And I understand, he's a lifer, you know, devil dog all the way, Semper Fi. I mean, he couldn't let it go, man. And he was a good boss, but most of the people that worked for him hated his guts.
Right.
And because he just couldn't leave that, he expected that. He'd come in and tell you war stories in front of a group of 50, 60 people, and all the older ladies in the room, and even some of the guys, were just like, this guy's talking about killing people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to know your audience. You got to know when to keep it there and when to cut it down. And if you're in the military, keeping that attitude's great. But whenever you're not in the military and you're working just a regular civilian job, you got to know, you got to cut it down some. And
yeah, definitely know the audience. I think that's a key,
key
thing when you're telling war stories and stuff, because otherwise you're gonna be getting some looks from some folks. But you know, hopefully, you know, from what I'm gathering from everything that we're talking about here, this seems like a good guide. Guide might not be the right word, but, you know, a good reference for folks who, whether they're veterans themselves, maybe even family or friends of a veteran who they're seeing going through similar things to what we're talking about here. It seems like your book, The Veteran Again, could be a good reference for them to see, like, what is that path that this guy went through, and how can we help our friend or ourselves to get through this time in their lives, you know, a little bit easier. Not to say that we want to make everything super easy for everybody, but, you know, if we can help guide them in the right direction and help them come to some of the conclusions that they need to come to, and hit some of those checkpoints, if you will, in that recovery phase, and get through it a little bit quicker, a little bit easier. You know, if we can help people, then, you know, why not? Let's try to do that. And it seems like that's what your book sort of does, right?
I hope so. I mean, it's a success in my eyes. If it could help one veteran with any issues they have, man, I won the lottery. I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to do anything else with it. You know, I hope my book can help veterans and just to see that there's hope on the other side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you read the book, you know, most people are like, this guy's going to kill himself sometime, man. And I wanted to touch on the 22 veteran a day deal. You know, it's horrific. It's horrible. I wanted to like touch on it and get as close to it as I could without getting there. And there's no way I would ever write anything about a veteran committing suicide, but I wanted to take it as far as I could. And me mentally, like writing the book, I mean, it gets pretty dark at times. Yeah. And writing it, man, I think I went down some holes that mentally probably I don't recommend going down. But at the end of the day, it's good to go down there to be able to come back out of it and just know that, you know, it's not all down and glum in life. You know, there's hope on, there's hope. And if you keep going, there's light at the end of the tunnel and there's something for you. And that's the gist of the book is yes, it's about a homeless veteran who's a drug addict and alcoholic and has all the issues in the world, but he keeps going. Mm-hmm. And through therapy and help from his friends and family, he gets the help he needs and he makes something of himself. So,
and that's, you know, one of those hopeful, inspiring messages that, you know, will hopefully give somebody who's out there who might be struggling, might be feeling like, I got nothing. I don't know how to work my way out of this. I don't even see a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, that's how far away I am from that light. You know, someone who is in that kind of situation, it's like, again, turn the page, you know, stick around, turn that page one more time. We'll maybe be able to
keep going.
Get there. Right. And we'll be able to keep going. And I really hope that people do get a copy of this book to serve as that reference or roadmap, if you will, to help them.
So.
You know, outside of your book and the stuff that we talked about today, are there any other resources that you are familiar with that you would recommend or suggest that might be able to help support other veterans or their families in addressing these types of issues?
Call the VA. Yeah. Call the VA. You know, that's the number one team out there is the VA, man. I know they're there to help. We might all hate them at times, but they are there to help. I've actually partnered with a group. It's called Operation 1010, and they're out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And when I put my book out, they bought it and read it and got back with me and like, Dustin, we want to, you know, how can we use your book to help us? And how can your book help veterans? And what we're doing is I'm trying to create like a Operation 1010 book just for them, and, you know, that they could help raise money for their organization. They're a PTSD organization where they want to help veterans in the Fort Worth, Dallas area with PTSD. And so I'm in the stages of trying to create a book that they could sell to people and keep all the proceeds from so they can keep their organization running. You know, if people donate money, they can give them a copy of the book as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm hoping that that helps. And any other veteran organizations out there that can use my book, man, I'm more than happy to make it work for y'all. You know, I'm not a therapist at all. And, you know, I can talk to somebody, but I am not a professional in that aspect. But I hope my book can help veterans. And any way my book can help a veteran, we can use it for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I want it to go. And, you know, if we can help somebody, if my book can help one person, man, it's a success in my eyes. So.
Well, absolutely. And to the point that you were just talking about, you know, you're not a therapist. You don't have that, you know, formal trained background in that area, which I don't think that is necessarily a problem or a bad thing, that people should look at it like, oh, well, geez, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about because he didn't do X, Y, or Z. Well, okay, fine. But you were also in the shoes of some of these other people. Like you
yes, sir,
dealt with some of those issues. And I think experience goes a really long way. And when we are speaking from not only a position of experience where you've been there, you've done that, you've gone through those experiences, but you also give a damn about the people who are on the other side of that. I think that is super powerful as well. And it shouldn't be ignored. It shouldn't be discounted or anything like that. So I think that type of messaging that you're bringing across here, you know, helping out those organizations, helping out, you know, people just who might stumble across your book, and hopefully the listeners will be able to grab a copy of this book. And you know, I'm really looking forward to getting that link out there and seeing how many people will grab a copy of this book. But, you know, I want people to recognize that, yeah, sure, the book is fictional. It's not, you know, a real individual that we're talking about here, but the circumstances are just as real as any other. And so, you know, I think it does a good job at getting that message across, and it really helps, you know, kind of frame the picture of what right and wrong look like. And I don't want to say wrong as in like, hey, you did the wrong thing or whatever, because we all make mistakes, right? But, you know, what's going to get you through this situation, and what's going to make things worse? And so that's, I think, what the book is accomplishing here. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting some folks, getting some eyeballs on that book, and hopefully helping some folks out.
I love hearing feedback from it. You know, some of the other books I've written, like my book about human trafficking, you know, people don't want to hear that stuff.
Yeah.
People don't want to hear human trafficking and what happens to the victims. And like, in that book, I wrote it as true as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with a bunch of human trafficking investigators. And so I was able to get their feedback on that. But like, in the veteran, I'm a veteran. I've been there. I've seen it. Almost every friend I have is a veteran. So I know I hit it.
Yeah.
You know, I know that what I wrote about in that book is what happens to veterans. And yes, it is a fictional story, but it's taken from real life stuff. I mean, it's, you know, what happens in the book is what happens to veterans. And I hope they could take that and learn from it, and hope build themselves up, or, you know, hopefully it can just help somebody.
Where can they go to get a copy of the book? I'll have a link in the show notes, but is there, you know, any special website that you have set up?
Dustin Carter 512 is my website. And on my website, there's links to the book to purchase it off Amazon. If somebody wants a signed copy, they could message me and just DM me. I'm Dustin Carter 512 on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn. You just search my name and you can just Google me, and I'll come up, you know. So if you want a signed copy, let me know. And if you don't, you can just buy it off Amazon and it'll ship it right to your house.
Excellent. So I'll have a link in the show notes for all of those things that we just talked about. But, you know, it's really been, I think, a great conversation. I think it's important to continue having this conversation throughout the military community, the veteran community, all of us together, and continue having this conversation so that we don't let that slip back into that old school mindset of just suck it up and deal with it, you know. So that's something I'm hoping to accomplish with this episode. Hopefully, you know, some of the listeners will take that away from it, and, you know, get a copy of the book, and more importantly, get the help, maybe if that's what they're needing.
Yes, sir. Get a copy of the book, you know, but more importantly, like you said, yeah, get the help you need. If you're a veteran that's struggling, read my book, check it out, and just know that as you're reading it, it gets better.
Yeah.
And life gets better, and the story gets better all the way to the end. So, you know, man, go pick up a copy.
There it is. All right. Well, thank you again, Dustin. Really, really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks again for taking the time to come on the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Made my day to be here today.
Excellent.